Okay. You'll just have to remember the first part of it. So he says, yes, I think that the ark would be okay, but it would be a whole lot easier for me to build a tower. So, Lord, I appreciate your suggestion about the ark, but I believe I'm going to build a tower instead. Now, you see, at that point, works haven't entered into it. No, works haven't entered into it. We're still in the faith phase. Because whether Noah is going to do what God said or not depends to a great extent upon whether he believes it's going to be necessary for him to do that. Whether he trusts in the remedy of God or whether he's going to trust more in his own remedy. Now you see, you need to think about this. I don't know what your circumstance may be in this matter of salvation, but I know there's a lot of confusion about it in the world today. And I sympathize with you. But you need to understand that you are no more able to come up with your own way of being saved than Noah was able to come up with his own way of being saved from the flood. We know he couldn't do that. And so if he had said, yes, God, I believe you, there's a flood coming. And yes, I believe you that that ark would work, but I'd rather make a tower. And so then he proceeded to build a tower. So he would have worked, and would have built that tower, and would have drank. Instead, he worked, and he worked, and he worked, and he built an ark. Now, was it the quality of workmanship and the diligence of the work that he gave that caused him to be saved? If that were what it was, then he could have been as diligent in building the tower. It wasn't the diligence or the difficulty, but it was the fact that the work that he did was the work that God had commanded and was the remedy that God had provided. That's the thing to remember. The work that Noah did was a part of the condition that God's grace revealed to him. And it was also a manifestation of the faith that he had in God. So, you see, look at it like this. Suppose there was somebody else out there who saw Noah start building his ark. And this wicked person. And he says, I think I'm going to build myself a boat. So this wicked person gets to work and builds himself a boat. See, he would have worked. See, he would have worked. But what would he not have done? He would not be proceeding from faith in the provision that God made. Nor would he be taking very seriously the warning that God had given. So even though he worked, without that work being a manifestation of faith in the provisions that God had revealed through his grace, that works would accomplish absolutely nothing for him. So that the works that Noah did here were conditional. They were conditional. Conditional works did not mean that Noah was absolutely perfect in everything he did, but when God's grace revealed to him a solution and said, this is it, then Noah did that. And so we see how the three things work together there. So the works don't refer to being perfect without ever making any kind of mistake in your whole life. But the works have to do with meeting the condition God has sent. Now, when you talk about the condition itself, that condition must be met. And it must be met exactly. And Noah did that exactly. Let me mention another one, another story in the Bible. Now, this is one where, again, we're familiar with it. It is recorded in Joshua chapter 6. It has to do with Jericho. Everybody remembers the story of Jericho, I trust. Jericho was the first city that the Israelites would encounter once they crossed the Jordan River over into Canaan proper. So God said, you are not going to have to take this city. I am going to give this city into your hand. And therefore, everything you take in this city is to come to me. It is to be given to me. It is to be dedicated to me. So he told Joshua, now this is the strategy. And I can imagine Joshua with bated breath, waiting to hear what the strategy is going to be for taking this city. Well, Lord, what's it going to be? Are we going to undermine the walls? Are we going to soak the ground at the foot of the walls with water and weaken the foundation so the wall will fall over? Or you want us to dig a tunnel under the wall? Or how about building a great big tall platform that we'll roll up to the wall and then we'll be up on a level and we can fight them on their own level? Or maybe get out here and take some of these catapults and throw stuff over? No. No, Joshua. No, no, no. Well, here's what I want you to do. Get the men of war, and you have some of them go before and some of them come behind the Ark of the Covenant. I want you to take seven priests bearing the trumpets of God, and they are to go along and they are to be blowing the trumpets. And so the men of war go before, followed by the priest and the Ark, and then more of the men of war. And you go around the walls of Jericho once a day. Lord, you mean just walk? Just walk around? Yes, Joshua. Now I want you to do that for 6 days. Then on the seventh day, I want you all to get out there and I want you to walk around that wall 7 times. And when you have completed walking around it 7 times, then I want you to give a great shout, and the walls will fall down. Now, where's the grace of God here? Well, the grace of God is already involved in being gracious enough to say, I'm going to give this city into the hands of the Israelites. That was nice of God. And here's the way we're going to do it. So, you see, the grace of God not only involves His letting us know that He's nice, letting us know that He loves and that He's wanting to do something good for us, it also involves the remedy, the solution. See, that's part of it. And if you think about it, if you have the idea that here is something really good, but you can't have it, it'd be kind of hard to rejoice about it. So it contains both the revelation of the favor of God and also how. Now, Joshua and the people heard that, and Joshua could have said, hey, Lord, now, I've been a warrior for most of my life, and that's not the way I'd do it. You ever heard anybody say, that's not the way I do it? A lot of religious people would say, oh, that's not the way I would do it. But can't we all agree that it's not the way I would do it? It's how does God do it? Joshua, being a man of faith, accepted that solution that God gave. And so he and the people, believing that, proceeded to walk around the walls. So they walked around those walls, and they did everything just the way God said. And they did it for 6 days, once a day, and then on the seventh day, they went around it 7 times. And then they blew the trumpets, and the people gave a great shout, and guess what happened? The walls fell down. Now, does that mean that the quality of the walking of the Israelites was such that the stomping of their feet was hard enough that it jarred the walls and weakened them so they all fell down? No. No, that didn't have a thing to do with it. The only reason that the walking around the walls worked was because God made it work. See, dismiss from your mind that it was the quality of the walking. It was the quality of the work. No, that had nothing to do with it. The work was only a condition that had to be met by the Israelites. When they met that condition, then the blessing was received. Now, another story. Again, one that's pretty well known. This is one of my favorite ones. And that is Naaman the leper. I think this is one of the best stories, one of the clearest stories to help to establish the relationship between grace and faith and works.
Naaman was a general in the Syrian army, but he was a leper. And on one of the raids, they had taken this Hebrew girl, and she had become a servant, a handmaid to his wife. So one day, the little girl was talking about her master, Naaman, and said, "Oh, I wish that my master could go to the prophet in Israel, because he would heal him. He could heal him." Well, the word got from the handmaid, of course, to the wife right there. And then the wife told the general. And then somehow it got to the king, I'm supposing through the general to the king. But it got to the king of Syria, who wrote a letter and sent the letter by Naaman to the king of Israel, demanding that the king of Israel heal his servant Naaman. When the letter came to the king of Israel, he was really angry. He said, "Well, look at what the man is demanding. Demanding that I heal his general of leprosy. What does he think I am? Why, he's hunting for a fight. That's all he's trying to do, is find a way to have a fight with me." Well, Elisha heard about how upset the king was, and he sent word, "Why are you tearing your garments?" In other words, this is not your affair. You send the general to me, and he will learn that there is a prophet in Israel. So Naaman came. Now at this point, the grace of God had been intimated. The girl, that little girl, in expressing her confidence in the prophet, her confidence in God, she was trusting that God would be favorable. But when Naaman got to the house of Elisha, then the grace of God becomes absolutely positive and revealed. Because Elisha sends word out, "You go dip 7 times in the River Jordan and you will be healed." Now by that statement, Elisha lets us know that God had determined he would heal Naaman. Now that means that the grace of God had been bestowed on Naaman, in that God has mercy upon him. He is willing to heal him. Notice that once again the grace of God is involved in telling him how. So it's not only the favor, but it's how to obtain the favor. So the grace of God is expressed by Elisha. "Go dip 7 times in the River Jordan, and you will be cleansed." Now, Naaman has heard this. And as Naaman hears this, the Bible does not indicate that Naaman thought, "Well, that won't work." It doesn't say that Naaman thought, "That won't work." No. The problem that Naaman was expressing was an ego problem. His ego problem was, "Well, behold, I thought the prophet himself would come out here. After all, I'm a general." Generals are, they're funny people. They have expectations. And they're supposed to be treated in a certain way. And he hadn't been treated in a certain way, the way that he was accustomed to. And Naaman had virtually ignored it. And it hurt his pride. "Behold, I thought the prophet himself would come out here and wave his hand over the place." Once again, now do you see, in Naaman's case, Naaman does offer some alternatives that he can think of. Now we've mentioned, we don't have any revelation that Noah even tried to think of an alternative. We don't have any revelation that Joshua tried to think of any alternative. But in the case of Naaman, it was obvious that Naaman had some ideas about alternatives. One of the points that I've made to people when you read in the miracles of the Bible, the Old Testament and the New, is that when you read about men's ideas about the way miracles are done or the way magic is done, first of all, you have to have a magic wand. And you have to do something with it. And then there's a big explosion of sparks or something. And there's, see, that's the way men look at it. Instead of just the unbelievable but quiet power of God at work, it just does it. No cascade of sparks, no big flashes, it just does it. But Naaman thinks, well, one thing he could do is come out and wave his hand over the place. He could take his wand and, although he didn't say that, it was the same kind of mentality. And this old Jordan, are not the rivers of Abana and Pharpar far better rivers than this river Jordan? I mean, if I have to dip in a river, I could have done that without ever coming down here. Well, now, wait a minute, Naaman. What is the problem here? Naaman was letting his pride get in the way of his faith accepting the remedy of God. So he was about to go home. And one of his servants came up to him and in terms of entreaty said, Father, if the prophet had bidden you to do some great thing, would you not have done that? If he had called upon you to do some terribly difficult thing, you would have done that. Why then don't you do what he said? Now Naaman was basically a good man, because he listened to what that servant said. He listened to what the servant said, and he took off to the Jordan. Now he's manifesting faith. And you know, if you're saved by grace through faith and that's it, not of works. No, the idea when the Bible says in Ephesians 2, not of works, the point is not of absolutely perfect obedience in all of your life. You don't have to be a perfect individual throughout your life and never have sinned at all to go to heaven. Salvation is for sinners. That's what that passage is talking about. Now, if you try to make that passage mean no conditional works at all, well, then what should Naaman have been right here? He should have been healed of his leprosy. Because the grace of God had been revealed to him, the remedy had been given, and he was on his way down to the river to do what God said. Somebody said, well, what if a limb fell on him on the way to the river? Well, he would have died a leper. That's what would have happened to him. But the limb didn't fall, as rarely does that limb fall. In fact, hardly ever has that limb fallen. But he gets down there to the river, and he goes out there, and I've done this with children so many times. Well, Naaman walks out there in the water deep enough that he can just lower himself in the water, and he comes up out of the water. That's once. Guess what? He's still a leper. Second time, he's still a leper. Now, he's doing the works. Now, listen, he's already accepted the grace of God. He's already believed. I mean, he's in the water. So, is he healed? No. Third, fourth, fifth, sixth time, he dips himself, comes up. Guess what? He's still a leper. He dips one more time. And he comes up out of the water, and his skin is like the skin of a child. Now, was it magic number 7 that did it? Was it the magic of the water of the Jordan? No. Because nobody else could have walked. No, you know, I mean, if lepers all around the land there had heard about that and said, hey, I heard that if you dip 7 times in the River Jordan, you can be healed of your leprosy. Why, they would have clogged it from one end to the other. But he wouldn't have healed them. Because it was not the work of itself, but it was the fact that this work was a condition that God had set. He had set and he had given it. Remember that a condition should not be viewed as an obstacle, but as the way. Too often we look at the conditions as an obstacle that keeps me from receiving what I want. I want to find a way to get around meeting those conditions. No, the conditions are the way. And so when he did what God, through his grace, had revealed unto him to do, he manifested his faith, and he met that condition, and he was saved from his leprosy. Now I have one other story. This one's not a Bible story, but it is a parable. A parable is an illustration, so I'm using another. This is what I sometimes call a Waldron parable.
This man was driving through the country, and as he drove through the country, he looked out and saw a chimney standing in the field. Obviously, there used to be a house out there. And as he looks out there, the sagebrush has grown up and everything, but he can still see some old tumble-down houses, sheds, or stuff like that out there. So he just gets out and goes over there to just kind of, he enjoys seeing chimneys out in the field and imagining what all used to go on at that house. And so he gets out, and he goes walking over there toward that chimney, and he's just looking at the old stone chimney and just trying to imagine what all would have happened there around that chimney. And then he thinks he hears somebody. He thinks he hears a voice. And so he listens very quietly. And yes, he's heard a voice. It is a voice saying, "Help." So he begins to try to focus in on where the voice is coming from. And as he makes his way around, he then spies the stone wall around a well, what we used to call a dug well. Now, when I tell this, I have to help people understand. You see, long years ago, people did not have faucets that you turn on and the water comes out. They didn't have that. You had to go find the water in a spring. Or men would dig with little short shovels, dig a hole, and dig the hole deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper until they got down deep enough they'd have water at the bottom. It's called a dug well. That's because it was dug. And so he found this well, and sure enough, the voice is coming from the well. So he goes over there, and he looks down in the well, and sure enough, standing in the water down there at the bottom of that well is a man who has obviously fallen in the well. Now, let me set this before you. We're going to parallel this with the idea of our situation before God. In sin, and we're going to look once again at the idea of grace and faith and works. So, I looked down at the man and I said, "Can you get out?" He says, "No." "Have you tried?" "Yes, I can't get out." "Can you dig your way out?" "I don't have anything to dig with." "Well, if I throw your shovel down, you think you can dig your way out?" "No." He wouldn't last long enough. No way he's going to be. "Have you tried to climb up the well?" "No." "Yeah, but I fall back in." Well, that man cannot save himself. Now, see, that puts him in the same category as we are. We cannot save ourselves. He cannot save himself. So that means that he is the one who can devise how he's going to be saved. No, he can't. Because he has no power whatever to do anything about it. If anybody's going to save him, it's going to be me. And so I begin to look around, and in one of the old buildings, I find a chain and a bucket. And so I bring the chain and the bucket back. This is obviously the old chain and bucket that used to be at this well. So I tell him, "I found this bucket with a chain on it. I'm going to lower it down to you. And when it gets down there to you, you get up there and sit on the bucket and hold the chain. And I'll tie my car and I'll pull you up out." And so here he is standing in the water up to here, and he says, "No, I don't like that. Don't like that one. Don't like that plan. Come up with another one." Now, do you think he's in a position to be deciding whether he likes my plan or not?
You see, the position we're in when we begin to make a decision about whether we like God's plan or not. Here the grace of God reveals to us the danger we're in, and then He reveals a solution. We're not in a position to do anything at all about that. So far as changing it or substituting for it, that's not our role at all. So I talked to the man, and the man finally says, okay. Now, he knows his danger. I have revealed to him the solution. He now believes that the solution will work. So I lower the bucket down to it. And now the bucket has come down, and it is sat in the water here. So he's just standing there looking at the bucket. And I say, well, aren't you going to grab hold of the bucket? He says, man, I don't have to do anything. Because your favor to me is so great that your favor alone is going to get me out of this well. Just because you've had mercy upon me, I'm going to get out of this well. Yeah, but you have to grab hold. No, I don't think I have to do a thing. I don't have to do a thing except believe in the remedy you have provided. That's all I have to do. No, it is not all you have to do. If you don't grab hold of that bucket and sit on that bucket and let me pull you up, you're not getting out of the well. That's the way it is. So, if he believes in my remedy, that faith is going to be absolutely dead in what it accomplishes unless he meets the condition that I have set. So he takes the chain, he gets up there on the bucket, and I pull him up out of it. Now picture this. As soon as he gets to the top, and as soon as he jumps out, he begins jumping around saying, I did it! I did it! I did it. What do you mean, you did it? All you did was sit on the bucket and hold the chain. Now, if I hadn't been up here, you could have sat on that bucket and that chain until it rusted. And you would have still been in the well. So that the work you did was not of the quality or of the value to get you out. It wasn't the quality of your sitting on the bucket and holding the chain that got you out. But that was a condition that I set for you. So that even though you met the condition, the credit is totally due to me for getting you out. I can take no credit for it. As a child of God, I can't take any credit for God saving me. But I had to meet the condition that God set. So, as I look at God and interact with God on this, the grace of God has appeared, instructing us to the intent that denying ungodliness and worldly lust, we should live soberly and righteously and godly in this present world. Our faith says, Lord, I believe that I am in danger, that I'm lost. And you have given me the remedy. You have provided the death of Jesus on the cross, raising him from the dead, bringing him back to heaven where he now sits enthroned. And he ever makes intercession through the blood that he shed. And I must believe that he is the Son of God. And I must turn away from the wicked life and not walk that way anymore. And I must confess my faith and not be ashamed, but willing to confess it. And I must be baptized to have my sins forgiven because that's what you said. Now, I believe that, but if I don't do it, then my faith is dead because it is not manifesting itself by meeting the conditions that God has uttered. So in all of these stories that we've looked at, the flood, Jericho, Naaman, and in the story then that I made up and told you about, in every one of those, it was the faith which seized upon the works
that manifested the faith and completed the grace of God.
So that's the way it is. You don't have to be confused.
The grace of God has appeared. The salvation has been brought down from heaven. It emanated from God and came down here, was revealed to us. We appropriate that by our faith in it and by manifesting that faith in meeting the conditions that God has uttered.
If you're not a child of God tonight, why don't you become one by meeting these conditions? Now, when you do that,
you will be saved by God's grace through your faith as you meet the conditions that He has given. You will not be saving yourself by the virtue of your own works, but you will be saved by meeting the conditions that faith requires in order to appropriate the grace of God.
If you're a child of God tonight, but you have been unfaithful, you have forfeited the grace of God, then come back to God, and our gracious God will receive you back. And so whatever your condition will be, if we can assist you tonight, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.